This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
WBBM News Time, 12:03. It's great to have you with us for the Wednesday edition of the Noon Business Hour. I'm Cisco Cotto. Still some rain falling throughout much of Chicagoland. Today's Noon Business Hour, in just moments, we'll get some analysis on that GDP number. Also, it is Personal Finance Wednesday. Some money moves that you need to make for 2020. And just how many credit cards should you have? The NCAA is going to allow players to profit off their images and likenesses. That's coming up. Also, Halloween, sometimes seen as an indicator for the stock market. We'll learn why in our next segment. Right now, the tally of the gross domestic product is out, along with a look at employment in the private sector. To talk about it, we're joined live in studio, Gus Fauché, chief economist at PNC Financial Services, based in Pittsburgh. Gus, good to see you in person and to be able to talk with you today.
Thank you very much, Cisco. Appreciate it.
Now, let's begin with the GDP number. Better than expected, 1.9%, nothing to brag about, but still better than expected.
Yeah, and it's a good solid number. We've seen GDP grow slow. A year ago was about 3% on a year-over-year basis. Now it's about 2%. That's what we've seen through most of this expansion. It's sustainable. We can continue to grow at that pace over the longer run. So I think things look pretty solid for the U.S. economy right now.
Now, do we need it to continue growing at that pace, or do we need it to step up a little bit?
Well, if anything, I think we're likely to see it slow a little bit in the near term. We're getting dragged from trade. Business investment was soft in the third quarter. We're likely to get less of a boost from government going forward. So I think we may see it slow to closer to about 1.6% by the middle of next year. But that's still enough to keep the economy going, moving forward. And consumers remain in very good shape, and they're going to remain the key driver of economic growth through 2020.
And going into the holiday shopping season, does that help as well? A lot of consumer spending obviously going on then.
That's right. We have solid job growth. We have good wage growth. The tight labor market is leading businesses to raise wages for workers. So all of that means that consumer spending will continue to grow. It's about 70% of the U.S. economy, and so that's the key driver.
Yeah, interesting. Yesterday, we talked about consumer confidence and how they're really confident about today, not so confident about the future, and yet they continue to spend. Maybe spend differently, but they continue to spend. Does it always come down to what you think about today and whether or not you're going to keep your job today?
That's right, and I think people look at the unemployment rate as 3.5%. They're seeing pay gains. It's the case that household income or wealth is up with rising home prices, rising stock markets. So all that is very good news for consumer spending.
Let's talk about payrolls. We got the ADP report up by 125,000 in October.
Yeah, a little softer this month. The GM strike is going to influence the numbers. The Bureau of Labor Statistics releases the government's official report on Friday. We expect to see job growth of about 130,000 for October. That's a bit slower than what we've seen for most of this year, which is about 160,000. But again, that's still enough to keep the economy moving forward. And so I think that that's a positive for overall economic growth.
Is there a certain level that is kind of the healthy, optimal job growth? Where would you like to see that number?
Well, over the long run, we only see labor force growth of about 90,000 or 100,000 per month. So we're still running it above that pace. So that's people who are graduating from school, coming back after having a child. We still continue to see job growth above that pace, which means that we're reducing slack in the labor market. And again, that's good news for wage growth and consumer spending.
Yeah, and ultimately, that's it. Employees want more money, and economists, I'm sure, want more money out there being spent and really driving things.
That's exactly right. And I think as long as we continue to see job growth that's above 100,000 per month, I think we're going to be in solid shape.
Always good insight. Good to see you in person. Thank you so much. Gus Fauché, chief economist at PNC Financial Services, based in Pittsburgh. Just ahead, Halloween is the signal tricks or treats for the markets this year. Some observers are counting on the so-called Halloween indicator to give a boost to the stock market over the next several months. Let's get the view of Mark Hulbert, investment columnist for The Wall Street Journal, Barron's, and MarketWatch.com. Mark, let's begin by just explaining this Halloween indicator. What is it?
Well, yes, it's one of these seasonal patterns that people love to focus on. This one actually has a long history, and it looks on the surface to be quite statistically sound. It turns out that if you go back and look over the last 150 years or so, the stock market has turned in almost all of its average gains. That isn't to say it works every year, but on average, almost all of the market's historical gain have been produced between Halloween and May Day, the so-called winter months. And the summer months, the other 6 months of the year between May Day and Halloween, the market on average produces very little return. And so this is a pattern that people look at every year. And if that were the end of the story, I'd say that's very good news for the market. Of course, there's always more to the story, and that's what I've written about this this week on the MarketWatch website. It turns out that if you go back and look even further into the data, it turns out that the strength that the market typically exhibits between Halloween and May Day comes almost exclusively from the third year of the presidential cycle. And that means that in the other 3 years of the cycle, and of course, we're not in that year that's a good one this time around, the market doesn't do any better on average in the winter months than the summer months. I know it gets very complicated, but the way I sort of put it is that a little knowledge is dangerous. You look at it on first blush, it looks pretty good. You look a little further, and unfortunately, it's not quite as exciting for the market.
This is why I have financial advisors, Mark Hulbert, because it is all very, very complicated stuff. I mean, really, timing is everything. As you mentioned, you can't just hear, oh, Halloween, yeah, maybe it's time to get in. It's just never as simple as that.
Well, that's right. Now, I have to say that because the knowledge of this seasonal pattern is fairly widespread on Wall Street, and most people don't know that it actually just traces to one out of the 4 years of the presidential cycle, it may mean that people will have a boost of optimism come Friday, or let's say at the close on Thursday of Halloween, and maybe that'll create a short-term boost. But it turns out that those kind of short-term boosts typically are not ones that you would want to invest or make any changes to your retirement account, for example, according to.
And obviously, in general, I mean, you can look at trends like these, but it does really matter what's going on in an individual market, something like a trade war or issue with employment, I mean, a recession, things like that can mess up those historical markers.
That's absolutely right, and it's well worth pointing that out, because these seasonal patterns that, you know, give people like myself, journalists and commentators, something to talk about, they're based on historical averages. So even if you believed, and I'm going to second guess that, of course, but even if you believed that the future is going to be like the past and on average the market's going to do better between Halloween and May Day, let's say over the next 30 or 40 years, the way you would play that is to make a bet every year for the next 30 or 40 years that the market will do well between Halloween and May Day. It turns out that you can't necessarily translate those long-term averages into an individual yearly bet because it just doesn't really work that way.
I would like to, before we let you go, Mark, get a contrarian's take on what you do when the markets aren't really very volatile. They're just sort of hanging around the flat line. If they're way up, if they're way down, seems like the contrarian knows exactly what to do. But what do you do when no one's really doing anything?
Well, yeah, that's a great question. I think in general, because the market has a long-term upward slope to its trend, the default should be that you're in the market unless there's some overwhelming reason not to. So even if the market is fairly boring and it turns out there's not a strong extreme, either bullish or bearish, that a contrarian can react to, I'd say give the market the benefit of the doubt. Where a contrarian might say is that if you have extreme optimism, then you might want to take some money off the table.
Yeah, and I just got the chart in front of me here, went all the way out to the 3 year, and you do. You just see that steady increase in the S&P. I guess it pays to look over the long run and not just over what's going on this week.
That's right. Now, the market does have this long-term uptrend, and the last 10 years have been an incredible uptrend. But you have to remember that came right after one of the worst bear markets in U.S. history, and those bear markets are an inevitable part of the investment landscape. So we should never expect that just because there's a long-term uptrend that long-term average will translate into any particular year. Unfortunately, it doesn't work that way either.
Thanks for the great analysis. Mark Hulbert, investment columnist for the Wall Street Journal, Barron's, and MarketWatch.com. Up next, the NCAA makes a major shift, allowing athletes to profit from their name, image, and likeness.
The best daily deal in Chicago, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
Another chance for you to win $1,000. Keyword for cash is just ahead. The NCAA has bowed to pressure and will allow athletes to be compensated for use of their name, image, and likeness. To talk about it, we're joined by Craig Debkin, professor of economics at UNC Charlotte. Craig, thanks for being with us. Explain to us, what exactly has the NCAA decided here? What are they going to let athletes do?
Well, it looks like they're going to let them be compensated for their name, image, and likeness, which is kind of the standard trope we've seen for the past 4 or 5 years. This is stemming out of some antitrust cases that the NCAA came out on the losing end of a few years ago, and other pressures from players both in the NCAA and outside of the NCAA for unionization and other types of employment representation as opposed to just being called a student athlete. So it looks like the NCAA is kind of realizing that they're losing the fight on that in terms of the NCAA. Losing the argument in the court, sorry. So,
I think that's the athletes calling you right now, trying to find out how they can get in on this.
It's getting a bit annoying. I'm sorry about that.
So, no, it's all right.
Usually on silent. So, yes, I think this is an interesting development. Now, what we don't see is much in terms of specificity as to what's going to happen moving forward. So the California law is probably the one that most people are more familiar with just recently, and that law is not to go into place until 2023, which gave plenty of time to come up with some framework in which the student athletes could then get representation and figure out how they're going to be compensated. So I think it's a little bit – it's interesting that they're moving this way, but I think it's very vague as to where we're going to end up in the next 4 or 5 years.
Now, in theory, though, this could end up meaning a lot of money for certain athletes, the ones who are really the elite athletes, especially in sports like basketball and football.
Correct. And I think that's where we're going to see some pressure for the star athletes to somehow pool their resources. That is, they'll be able to make money on their images. I'm not sure that we can foresee that they'll keep all the money. That is, I can see where there's just some sort of quote-unquote revenue-sharing arrangement between the student-athletes and the schools or the NCAA as a group that would then allow lesser athletes or athletes that are in lower revenue sports to be able to share in that revenue. Again, it's all very vague as to how this is going to play out because we just haven't been here. I mean, it's been 40, 50 years since, or maybe longer, sorry, maybe 80 years since we've had student-athletes that are being paid directly for their for the athletic services.
Yeah, you know, another thing I know, actually, one of your senators there proposed actually making them pay taxes on their scholarships that they get. So I guess there's really perhaps some unintended consequences that may go into effect here.
I think that's right. I mean, it's very similar to other dramatic changes. We've been in one type of regime for, say, like 80 years, since at least right after World War II. And now we're moving into another phase where not only are the players going to be paid, but they're being paid in a way that we really wouldn't have imagined 80 years ago. I mean, the amount of money that is on the table is substantial. And so, yes, I can see where, just like we make betting legal and then the states will tax that, I can see that this would become a standard operating procedure for the athletes, but then they will be taxed as well. So, yes, I think they've been arguing that they are different than the regular students, and this is true, both in terms of what they bring to the universities and their colleges, but in their time and whether they are restricted by the NCAA in what student athletes can do. So they've been arguing that, and now they're going to be treated differently. And so they will probably continue to be treated differently, just with the unintended consequences.
Thanks so much for the analysis. Craig Debkin, a professor of economics at UNC Charlotte.
News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon. I'm Cisco Cotto. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM. The Federal Reserve is expected to lower a key interest rate today. We'll discuss the impact on consumers. Right now is a great time to make smart money moves for next year. We'll get some help in Personal Finance Wednesday. The Chicago teacher strike drags on, a 10th day of canceled classes, and talk of makeup days now entering the picture. On Wall Street, the Dow up 12, NASDAQ down 11, and the S&P is down 2 points. Oil is down 1.5%. It's back in the $54 range. Still a little lingering rain in Chicagoland. Once that's gone, should be good for the rest of the day. Some drizzle overnight with a low of 36. Tomorrow's high 39, and we'll get some more snow tomorrow, maybe a few inches before it's over. Right now, 37 degrees. The Noon Business Hour is presented by the Village of Bedford Park. Markets have come off earlier lows, pretty much all right about the flat line right now. Let's see what's going on. Hugh Johnson, Chairman and Chief Investment Officer at Hugh Johnson Advisors, based in Albany, New York. Hugh, what do you make of what you're seeing today?
Well, I think that everybody's waiting to see what the Federal Reserve is going to do. I think everybody, it's a bygone conclusion, shall we say, that the Fed is going to reduce interest rates a quarter, 1%. There's a little nervousness about whether that'll happen or not, but not much. And the real issue, Cisco, as you can well imagine, is not so much this cut, but is there another cut in the future? Will they cut in December? Will they cut maybe, say, around May of next year? That's the real question. So the question is, what has the Federal Reserve got up their sleeve next? Is this just a one and done, or are we looking at maybe two and done? Because that'll determine the level of interest rates over the course of the next 6 months, and that's really important to stock prices.
Yeah, we'll talk about that. Why is it important, and what does Wall Street want? And the reason I ask is because, obviously, cheaper money is better. But on the other hand, if the Fed keeps cutting rates, it may mean that there's problems on the horizon.
And that's exactly right. There's a trade-off. And the trade-off is, look, they're reducing short-term interest rates because the economy is in the process of slowing. And obviously, if we get numbers that are not particularly good, particularly as we move into 2020, that, again, is not good news. That says that the economy and earnings are just not up to speed. But if the Federal Reserve were to sit idly by and do nothing about that, that would really concern investors. So the Federal Reserve, you know, the investors are genuinely worried about earnings, genuinely worried about the economy, genuinely worried about what they're going to look like in 2020. But they're also saying, look, if we do get that, if the economy slows further, it's got to be the case that the Federal Reserve will reduce interest rates further and try to offset the bad news of slower earnings.
How are you feeling about earnings season so far? Not only the results, but also the forward guidance.
Yeah, that's another great question. The earnings season, you're looking through the rear view mirror, you'd say, gee, this is really good. 80% of companies have reported earnings that have been better than expected. But then you look at the fact that analysts are reducing their estimates for earnings for 2020, and they've been coming down steadily throughout the quarter, despite the fact that the earnings that we're seeing from companies are better than expected. And the reason for that is the forward guidance that we're seeing from companies is that things are slowing. Everybody's nervous about the impact of trade on their earnings, on their results. And so everybody's reducing their estimates for what's going to be the outcome in 2020. So good news looking through the rear view mirror, not such good news as we're looking ahead. And earnings are a part of this, an important part of the picture, and make a lot of investors very nervous. One of the reasons why stocks are starting to struggle and starting to stall out because of the, you know, uncertain outlook for earnings.
Fascinating pressure if you're running these companies, because people care about what you do, what you've done, what you say you're going to do, what you end up doing. It just seems like there's people just constantly swirling around looking at what's going on and what you think is going to go on.
Oh, you bet. Everybody's watching. Every word that comes from a chief executive's mouth is you know, we work it over and over and over to try to determine whether this stock, this company is going to produce this kind of earnings, and is the stock pricey, overvalued, or is it fairly valued, or is it undervalued? We're really working hard on the subject of valuation, and earnings are the key variable in that equation.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. Always appreciate your insight, Hugh Johnson, Chairman and Chief Investment Officer at Hugh Johnson Advisors. Up next, it's Personal Finance Wednesday. Some money strategies to make a better 2020 as we're just about headed to the end of the year.
Loaning useful information each weekday. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Personal Finance Wednesday here on the Noon Business Hour, sponsored by Geiger Wealth. This afternoon, we're looking ahead to the new year and moves you can make now to improve your financial situation. We welcome Craig Bolanos, founding partner and chief executive officer at Wealth Management Group in Inverness and Downers Grove. Craig, there are probably several things that we're going to get to today, but if you had one to just say, this should be your number one priority as you think about the new year, what would it be?
Oh, my number one priority going into year end, if we're talking about taxes, just to give you an example, is everyone's got to check their withholding. The Tax Cut and Jobs Act, which went into effect last year, was the largest overhaul to the tax code in some 30 years. And a lot of people got a smaller refund than they planned on. Other people ended up owing more than they planned on. And I want to challenge everybody right now, with only a couple pay cycles left, to go out to a free website from the IRS, calculate your estimated taxes, and consider updating that W-4 at work. That's my number one.
Well, because right by the time you do your taxes, some people waiting until March or April, by that time you got a whole quarter in where you may be paying the wrong amount for next year.
Absolutely. Let's get in front of it now. Let's not have any surprises. Let's look from where we fell short in 2018 to make the 2019 tax season that much rosier.
All right, let's talk about bills. A lot of us have bills. What do we do? Is there a way to get caught up?
Well, you know what? A lot of us have bills. You know, expenses are a part of life. But I want to turn this again into a sincere and actionable idea. I think everyone's single largest expense is not their mortgage. It's not their kids. Cisco, it's our taxes. And if you think about some of the bills in your life, you might just want to consider going into the end of the year prepaying some of those bills in order to bunch deductions into the current tax year, which allows you to itemize, which in turn helps you save on taxes. So that's what I think about when it comes down to bills at the end of the year.
Yeah, and really reinforce that. They can help you on your taxes, because I think a lot of people hear pay your bills early, and that's not very attractive.
No, that's right. You know, I think so much is available to us in terms of strategy, and that strategy, again, really all comes down to taxes. So whether it's giving to charity wisely, whether it's prepaying real estate taxes, but being mindful of how that's going to work through the new Tax Cut and Jobs Act, or even this, I think of the end of the year, there's so many parents and grandparents, Cisco, that they know that their kids, their grandkids are struggling with college. Well, maybe let's help them out with some of those 2020 college expenses by going ahead and prepaying them in 19 and taking advantage of things like the American Opportunity Tax Credit or the Lifetime Learning Credit. All of those are brilliant strategies going into year-end 19.
And what about charity? A lot of people thinking about that at the end of the year, how to give to charity and how much should I give and when should I give?
Well, I think, you know what, at the end of the day, you should give to charity because charity needs money in order to do outreach and do wonderful things. But I have a simple rule out there for everyone who's listening. If you're over the age of 70 and a half, dollar one and dollar less that you give to charity comes from your IRA, your required minimum distributions. It's called a qualified charitable distribution. If you're under the age of 70 and a half, the rules have been rewritten. What we should be focusing on is donor advised funds is no longer a vehicle used for wealthy people. Donor advised funds are now vehicles that are simply used for charitable people. So that's how we start making our giving a little bit more wise.
Good stuff. Thank you so much. Craig Bolanos joining us on Personal Finance Wednesday, founding partner and chief executive officer at Wealth Management Group. This time tomorrow, Technology Thursday, and still to come, how the expected Fed rate cut will affect your wallet.
Discussing the news affecting your money. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Another Fed interest rate cut is expected to be announced by the Federal Reserve at the top of the hour. Let's look at the impact with David Jones, chairman of DMJ Advisors, based in Denver, also author of the book Understanding Central Banking. David, it seems like a foregone conclusion here that we're going to get another rate cut.
Yeah, we're at it again. It seems like we're a broken record, Cisco. The third cut this year should be likely at this Fed meeting at the end of October. That brings us down to 1.5% to 1.75% in that official federal funds policy rate. The Fed, I think, was really worried about the trade sector, that war with China. But we've got some positive news there. It looks like we're at least working in the direction of an agreement, perhaps in several parts. So we've got some positive news on trade. We also have some positive news on that never-ending Brexit, the British effort to get out of the European Union. seems like that's going on forever, but at least the terms look more favorable, and there's another delay in the deadline. So two pieces of good news. I do have some bad news, and that's on retail sales. They were much weaker than expected in September, possibly pulled down by that negative effect of the trade war on global manufacturing.
Let's talk about the consumer impact of a rate cut. I think people assume that the Fed sets interest rates for everything. It's not really the case, but it does impact everyone.
It sure does, and it's a very important point to make. Every cut from the Fed will help build a little bit more confidence in terms of the general economy, particularly with respect to the business sector and spending there, which helps create jobs for the consumer. And I think it does help consumer confidence. Even though rates are at a very low level, another cut helps the consumer in terms of the low cost of borrowing. And that has been helping housing in particular. So consumers should benefit, and they needed a boost after that surprisingly weak September retail sales number. It looks like some of the situation was based on an early Labor Day, which pushed back to school sales back into August and made that month much stronger and September much weaker. But for whatever reason, I think consumers need a boost, and that Fed rate cut should do it.
Always good to have your analysis. David Jones, chairman of DMJ Advisors. If you missed any part of today's show, you can go to our stream and just rewind to the time that you want. We have a brand new pause and rewind function. It works on our website and also on the radio.com app.
Spring is a time of renewal, so why not refresh your home with a little help from Blinds.com? We make getting custom window treatments a minor project with major impact. Choose from premium blinds, shades, and shutters. We even have options for your patio, too. Blinds.com invented a better way to shop for custom window treatments. There's no pushy salespeople in your home or inflated showroom prices. Our design experts can help you find the perfect window treatments on your schedule. We'll even send free samples directly to you. Plus, we can handle the measuring and installation for you. Unlimited window treatments installed for just one low cost. And with Blinds.com, you'll always get transparent pricing. No hidden fees. Our free shipping and 100% satisfaction guarantee can put the spring back into your step. And into your home, too. Shop Blinds.com right now and save up to 45%. Up to 45% off for a limited time at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.